Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
You would expect me to say Jan Bilton as well, but of course it's August and people go on holiday in August, including Jan. Yes, he's away in Turkey, getting a Brazilian butt lift, I think, isn't he, Terry?
I thought it was his teeth he was getting sorted out. I mean, let's be honest with you. I mean, you could do with some help in both areas. I mean, you know. He doesn't listen to this when he's away, does he?
Of course he doesn't. No. And he won't be listening to much. I think it takes a long time to recover from the sort of anaesthetic he'll be requiring. But we all wish him well in his recovery and how amazing he's going to look. I think the reason he's gone to Turkey is because you've decided to start videoing us, haven't you?
I am experimenting with the videoing to see whether or not there's potential for putting this here podcast on YouTube using the video. And so we are actually recording this video. And it won't be published, listeners.
No.
Sorry to say.
Sadly not.
But it is happening. And so, yeah, perhaps Jan is just falls under the rule of, you know, any camera that's recording is a live one and is, you know, hurrying off to Turkey to get himself fixed up so he can be his full-on best.
Yeah.
It is one of his problems, Jan. He does tend to feel a little bit insecure when he's around strapping examples of humanity like you and me, Graham.
Well, this is true. This is true. And he shouldn't, really, because he's on our side. It's not as if we're like trying to dominate him in any way, other than the fact that he's weak and we are strong.
Yeah, I mean, beyond the natural laws of things.
Yes, of course.
Yes,
of course.
You're absolutely right.
Of course. Yeah. Because we are men and we must follow those natural laws. Listeners.
The listeners understand.
Of course, yeah. The listeners understand because they are men too.
Even the women. Whoa, hang on, that's not right.
Yes, even them. Yes. Anyway, enough about our male chat. Should we talk about some football? I suppose that's what we should do because we are the Sound of Football. And new listeners who are listening to the third episode, this is the killer one, isn't it? This is the one where they've got to think, well, I'm giving a third episode. If things don't improve, then that's it. I'm going back to whatever crap the Athletic are putting out. I think what we've got this week is going to be great, though, isn't it, Terry? It's only me and you, but I think it's going to be great. So first off, I suppose we should catch up on what's happened at the weekend. There were some great games. We went to Carl Shorten, didn't we, to go and watch Leaf play. I have just watched Leaf play on Bank Holiday Monday in a crap game. So I'm not really happy with Leaf at the moment, but they did play a decent game against Croydon Athletic on Saturday. But before the game on Saturday, Tottenham played City, didn't they, up at the Etihad? And Tottenham good under Frank or not as good as they were under Ange? What do you think, Terry?
Well, I mean, under Ange, they went to the Etihad and they won 4-0, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Right. So it stands to reason that, under Frank, they've gone to the Etihad and they've only won 2-0, which, if you think of it in those terms, that's quite disappointing.
It is.
I mean, so far, it's not looking good for Thomas Frank.
Yeah, I think that's the only logical conclusion you can actually draw from that. That's maths, listeners. Don't send us any hate mail because we're just looking at the stats. We're just looking at the figures, and the figures say that Ange is twice as good as Thomas Frank. But, hey, look, they're still second, so, you know.
Yeah, silver linings and all of that stuff. But, I mean, will they win the Europa League? They won't. I mean, they won't. I mean, I'm telling you right now, and unlike last season, when Tottenham did win the Europa League, Tottenham this season, they're not going to win the Europa League. They haven't got a chance, mate.
A chance. No, they haven't. I mean, all those years when you could get into the Champions League and you think, I know this Champions League is going to be awful, isn't it? And so I'll tell you what, it'll be fine because come March, we'll be in the Europa League. Doesn't happen anymore. That little wonderful route into some modicum of success in the second half of the season. No, that's gone for you now. You can't have that anymore. Which is a shame, but, well, what can you do? Muddle on, Tottenham fans. Muddle on with Thomas Frank. I mean, obviously, he's only half the manager that Ange Postecoglou was, but I'm sure it'll be okay.
Well, they'll definitely stay up, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I think so. Not too sure about United, but who knows? Who knows? It's a long... We're only two games in, and we're not going to caveat all our things we say this week with, oh, yeah, it's only one game in. It's only two games in. You know, it's still early days. Still lots and lots of football left to play. But there is lots of stuff that we can talk about that we talked about last week and updates. Because last week we were talking about Eze going to Spurs. I did say at the time, I said, this whole thing is going to bite me in the ass. I'm going to have to spend lots of time on Tuesday re-editing it because he's going to go to Tottenham. And he didn't go to Tottenham, did he, Terry? What happened to him?
He went to Arsenal instead. Which, you know, I mean, that makes sense because he is an Arsenal fan. If there are Tottenham fans who are disappointed, then I wouldn't be because he's an Arsenal fan. Well, yeah. You don't want an Arsenal fan running around in a Tottenham shirt. I mean, I know he's a good player, obviously. And I know he would have been a good player for Tottenham. I'm not suggesting that he would have been unprofessional or anything like that. But, you know, I mean, did you really want to have effectively an Arsenal player running around in the Tottenham shirt? I would probably say not. Obviously, as a Palace fan, I'm deeply, deeply sad to see him go. He has a major impact on our history as a football club. And it was also a ridiculously good footballer. But for Arsenal, he does kind of fill in that Kai Havertz-shaped hole very, very nicely. Yeah, it's a great story for Eze because I'm sure many listeners will be aware that he was an Arsenal youth team player. He was washed out at the age of 13. And by his own admission, I mean, he was in his bedroom for days, inconsolable in the days that followed after being washed out. So for him to come back like this, while it's disappointing as a Palace fan, you know, it's a lovely human story. He goes also with I think, the club's best wishes and I think the fans' best wishes. I don't detect any animosity or anger. You know, it's not like when we've lost players to bigger clubs, to other clubs, particularly London clubs in the past. This time, there seems to be some goodwill about that. And it leaves Palace with some problems. But it's a great news for Arsenal and for Eze. And in time, it'll be a good move for Tottenham because they'll be able to sign a player that maybe might actually want to play for their club.
Yes. I mean, you say they don't want an Arsenal fan to play for him, but Harry Kane did all right there, didn't he?
Sol Campbell, I suppose, as well, is another example. But, you know, let's not get too dragged into precedent. And let's try not to overanalyze my takes because, you know, they don't stand up to scrutiny.
No, of course not.
Okay, long-term listeners will be aware.
But, yeah, I mean, I suppose really Palace fans, the ones who will get angry about things, are still angry about the whole UEFA thing, though, aren't they, at the moment? They're a bit sidetracked by that. And they had the Forest game to be angry about. You were there last Thursday, weren't you, for the game against Terry?
Against Fredrikstad. Fredrikstad. The name of the team is Fredrikstad.
How did that go?
Palace won, and it was a difficult game because hours beforehand, the plan was for Eze to play, but the deal reached a point where it was so close that I think it was considered to be genuinely foolhardiness for Eze to play in the event that he might have picked up an injury and scuppered the deal. So they played without him. They played Justin Deveni in Eze's place. Deveni is turning into a fine player.
He is.
With nerves of steel, and I think he's going to be excellent. But obviously, it was a lot to ask him to do. And we were sat there watching the game, and there were moments when we were looking at it and going, if only we had some kind of, you know, attacking sort of like player that could sort of like drift into those clear, open spaces where there's no attacking players right now. If only we had such a player. But we don't. And it's also sad as well because I think there was a genuine desire to say goodbye. You know, I have visions of him sort of like probably getting substituted on the 75th minute or something like that and getting, you know, a send-off, which I think he deserves and I think the fans would have liked. But, I mean, it wasn't to be, and that's it. We'll just have to give him his send-off when he scores a hat-trick against us when Arsenal come to Selhurst during the course of the season. But in other respects, yeah, I mean, we won. It was a 1-0 win. Fredrikstad are 8th in the Eliteserien. And while they were super professional, as you'd expect, very, very tough opponents, they were pretty limited. And, I mean, Palace really should have scored more than one goal. But for a team like Crystal Palace playing in their first proper UEFA football match, I think the best thing to do is just to get through unscathed without sort of like stepping on any rakes. And they did manage to do that. And I'm pretty certain that if they can hold out the likes of Chelsea, then they'll certainly be able to hold out Fredrikstad and defend that one goal lead up in Norway and maybe even improve upon it. So it was kind of positive apart from when it wasn't positive. The less than positive parts were obviously Palace fans continued indignance at UEFA and indeed Nottingham Forest. And there were an awful lot of singing of the Fuck UEFA song, which is a very rude and offensive song. And nevertheless, they were singing it because they're very indignant.
Yeah, it is a bit something because they are in Europe. They should be celebrating. It should be a happy time for them. And yes, they do have to go through this whole thing of going through a playoff to actually get to the league phase, which is annoying because they did have a league phase place in the Europa League. And now Forest have not had to go through these games against Fredrikstad to get into their European adventure this season. Yeah, you do kind of hope that Forest do horribly this year. I do anyway, because they're run by a crook.
Yeah, I don't believe you're supposed to say that. And in fact, Crystal Palace fans unfurled a banner making it absolutely clear that Varoufakis is not a crook.
They did, yes.
They made it clear. I don't know. I mean, apparently the FA are investigating. I've no idea why, because it does clearly state that he is not a crook. I have no idea what the issue is. Nottingham Forest fans will fundamentally disagree with what I'm about to say. But if it is true that the reason why Palace are not playing in the Europa League is directly because of a complaint lodged by Nottingham Forest, then I think that's dirty pool. And I hope they get some serious karma off of the back of that. And it might well be that they do, because, you know, they may well be about to lose their coach. And this is not a good time to be able to lose their coach. We'll see what happens. But obviously, Nuno said before the Palace game that he and Marinakis do not have a good relationship and that they're not really speaking to each other. And there's a new CEO, a guy called Edu. Graham, you'll know extremely well.
Yep.
And I don't know whether or not that's improved relations between the manager and the club. So things are a little bit uncertain at the moment with Forest. And yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but I kind of hope that they get a good old shelling this season, because I think that that's poor show. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about this. And Forest fans will say, oh, well, you know, they should have got their paperwork in on time, shouldn't they? And, you know, they would, of course, be right, but it doesn't make them any less annoying.
Especially if they say it like that.
And they do say it like
they
that,
do
because
say
that's
it like
how
that, yeah.
All Nottingham Forest fans talk, as we know.
Talk is that Ange is going to take over from Nuno.
Oh. And then obviously I hope Forest do extremely well and win the Europa League again, because I am Team Ange. But I mean, that's a different matter. But I will pivot my opinion and become the hypocrite when that happens. On that happy day, I will be Team Ange, Team Forest.
And then we'll see whether or not he's better than Thomas Frank, won't we?
They'll have the chance to go head to head. Yeah,
they will.
Absolutely.
There are plenty of other sacked Spurs managers that Forest can go for instead. But all I've heard is the fact that Ange is the one in the frame, supposedly. So there's still no resolution to the Isak story, is there? That's something we talked about last week. There's what now, just about, well, less than a week, isn't there, left of the transfer window. Are you thinking anything's going to change in the last few days with the Isak thing, Terry?
I feel Newcastle will find a striker, then they will let Isak go. He may have to park in the Anfield car park on deadline day evening in order to see it through. But something tells me that this is going to be Newcastle. They need a striker.
Yeah.
And if Isak is not going to play for them, then they need someone else. They're just going to have to sort it out. And so I suspect that that is what they will eventually do. And that will then leave the door open for Liverpool to sign him. I guess any wrinkle for that might be that they just simply can't get it all done in time, in which case Isak joins in the winter and spends the autumn not even warming the bench, spends the autumn training with the reserves. That's not out of the question at all. So that's a possible scenario, but there's still enough time in the window to get these things done. I mean, obviously, we're recording this before Liverpool and Newcastle play each other on the telly. That's going to be an absolute spectacle, to be honest with you. And I think we're all looking forward to that. We thought that there was rancour yesterday at Selhurst Park. My God, there's going to be some rancour here. And we do like a bit of rancour.
Everyone's going to be ranking all over the place, aren't they? There was some happier atmospheres, though, wasn't there, across the weekend? Because you had Everton in their new ground at the Hilly Dick.
Yeah.
And winning at the Hilly Dicks. And that looks spectacular. Really does, doesn't it? It looks like a fabulous ground, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You've got to actually take your hat off to it. I mean, it took a long time to build, and as you can expect, I mean, like a big project like that is a major drama, especially to do it, you know, within the bounds of a city on a dockside. Not an easy project at all. £800 million, but it does look like a really, really, really good project there and a fine stadium. Obviously, it's not going to be able to capture the atmosphere of Goodison Park. Why would it? But, I mean, it certainly looks to me like they've set up Everton for the remainder of the century. That's really, really good. And I imagine that they'll make a ton of cash out of that stadium in a way that they wouldn't have done at Goodison. And it does look really, really nice. And obviously, yeah, a good atmosphere there. First night at the Hilly Dick, first afternoon at the Hilly Dick, and of course a win. And that's nice. You want to see that. And it was a win against Brighton. So that's quite pleasing as well.
Another team that weren't in a new home, well, they're a relatively new home, but actually is their home now, they're not renting it out, is Coventry. Coventry celebrated the fact that they now own their stadium by humping QPR 7-1. There's no coincidence there, is there? That's a statement of intent, isn't it, from Coventry, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a football club that has suffered greatly, worse than clubs like, I'd say, even Sheffield Wednesday right now are suffering, yeah, insofar as, you know, they've been kicked out of their stadium. They haven't owned their stadium. There's been a huge amount of uncertainty about the ownership of that club down the years. It's an absolute saga. But they're now under a single ownership, and now that ownership has been able to consolidate the stadium as well. And so it now falls into their hands. And yeah, when you own your own stadium, of course, you're in a much better position to monetize it. Although it's 20 years old. So I was about to say it's a modern stadium. Just because we remember, yes, when it was built doesn't mean it's a new stadium. But it's as old as the Emirates, I suppose.
Around the same vintage as the Emirates. Yeah.
It's a modern stadium. It's a modern facility by stadium standards. And it's tremendous news for them. And I have to say, and I've been critical of the coaching acumen of England's Frank Lampard. And I think rightly so, because I think he has sometimes been overpromoted. He's been given jobs that he hadn't earned. I think at Chelsea, he wasn't ready for that job. And certainly at Everton, he wasn't ready for that particular challenge. But he has really proved himself, I think, at Coventry. And it's a really, really good fit. And I think we can all watch with a degree of interest to see what happens this year with Coventry, whether they can sneak a playoff place and get themselves back into the Premier League. If you're old enough, listeners, you will remember when Coventry were in the old First Division in the Premier League, and remember that they were a bit of a lower mid-table, sort of lower middle-class club, I suppose, to use modern parlance. And they were a little bit of an irritant, particularly to newly promoted clubs who were just trying to get by, because they had a lot of staying power, but they never really did much exciting, apart from win the cup in 1987. So I think there are some of us who are a certain vintage that are only just about ready to welcome Coventry back into the Premier League. But their fans have been through a lot, and they deserve another crack at the big time. And I think that it's good news. It's good for the game. We should be pleased. Coventry are on their way.
Listeners, you'll know how annoying it is when a side just perennially just finishes top of the bottom half and eventually wins an FA Cup.
No, it's beyond tedious. Yeah, I know. Such clubs really, yeah, they should be relegated. It just has a right. Twice.
Yes.
But there it is. There it is. Absolutely. Sure. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. No, it's sometimes, Graham, it's tough to look in the mirror. It really is.
But what it isn't tough to do this year is watch some Bundesliga, isn't it? Actually, it's really easy in the UK, and it's free. My God, it's free.
Never been easier.
Yeah. I think there's more free Bundesliga than there is actually English football on the BBC. What does that say, eh? What does that say for your licence fee?
Foreign leagues coming over here, taking up our airtime.
They're ramming the Bundesliga down my throat.
Ramming it. Yeah, shall I offer some background context?
Go on, then.
I'll offer a bit of analysis. So the Bundesliga was on Sky for the last four seasons. That deal expired. And it looked like it had been renewed because we were starting to see Bundesliga games turning up on Sky. But in fact, what's happened is that the DFL, the Bundesliga International, have done a deal to put the Friday game on the iPlayer, on the BBC iPlayer.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, big. And then the Saturday evening game, the Topspiel, on pay TV on Sky. And then the Sunday games on Amazon pay-per-view. The Amazon pay-per-view piece, we won't discuss that. It's stupid. It's a terrible idea. But they've done it. So let's just not talk about it. What's really interesting is the free-to-air stuff that they've done, I think, because in addition to the iPlayer, but they've also licensed it out to a couple of YouTube channels. One of which I can't remember the name of the channel, but it is one of Mark Goldbridge's channels. It's his. He's got his Man United channel, and he's got this general football channel. And this is the one that it's on. So Mark Goldbridge, I don't think needs to be introduced to the listeners. People know who he is.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people have their opinions on him. And let us keep our opinions on Mark Goldbridge to ourselves, shall we? He's got this channel. He previously said he thought that the Bundesliga was shit. But nevertheless, he has got this channel. And I assume that he does watch-alongs with it. And it's also gone to the Overlap, which is Sky Sports podcast, sort of like YouTube channel thingy. And I guess the plan here is to do watch-alongs, which is a really interesting idea.
Mm.
And I do wonder whether or not this is where leagues, particularly in the UK, other leagues could look at and go, yeah, we should really be giving this stuff away because we're not really going to make that much money in the UK because it's completely dominated by the Premier League, the EFL and the Scottish League. I mean, let's be honest with you, overwhelmingly, those are the leagues that we watch here. And so if you're going to go into that kind of market, don't try charging people for it. It's going to be difficult. And so there is money to be made, I think, in YouTube. And of course, the eyeballs are going to be fantastic for things like sponsorship and all of that stuff on the iPlayer. It was in the top 10 of most watched without Bundesliga match that was streamed on the Friday. So it clearly did cut through to a certain degree. It's a really, really interesting idea. But the really big thing about it is that running alongside that, they've also opened up these games for the Bundesliga's own YouTube channel, including all the second division games.
Mm.
All the second division games, the Bundesliga 2, all of those games are now on the Bundesliga's YouTube channel, available in the UK, absolutely free of charge. And that is top-notch value there, listeners, if you're not across the Bundesliga 2. It's a really, really, really entertaining league with some really big football clubs in there. Clubs like Hertha, Schalke, Kaiserslautern, Fortuna Düsseldorf. Clubs that are worth watching, in my opinion, and all for free. So I would definitely get involved in that.
This all emerged beginning of last week, didn't it, really? So it did sort of catch us unaware. When I was putting together the box set, that Friday night game was originally advertised to be on Sky. So there was obviously something that was going through at the time. It's a very, very last minute deal. But considering what the other major European leagues have done over the recent seasons, the Bundesliga seems to have taken quite a proactive approach of actually saying, well, what can we do? How can we still keep ourselves on screens over here? And I think they've done a really good job. I mean, we've seen what's happened with La Liga trying to go with their own platform and give it out to Premier Sports. Same thing happened last season with the Italian football. The Italian football was on One Football, wasn't it? But TNT, they had two games on a weekend. They've gone the same, but the rest of it's now on DAZN. So I think what the Bundesliga have done, go in on the iPlayer, which it's the most mainstream streaming platform in this country. So it's a fabulous idea. And to have every Friday night game on the BBC is just going to be, I think it's going to be game changing for them.
It's certainly got that potential. I think that I don't think they'll come to regret that at all, that decision. And it wouldn't surprise me if in the future they would then look at maybe the pay-per-view thing that they're doing and think, well, actually, we might as well just like shove it all on for free and just make some money back through the advertising and from the additional eyeballs that come from being on the BBC, of which there's no advertising to be had. But they got it into their heads that probably need influencers help to try and attract the Gen Zs in the UK. Which they may or may not succeed at. But I think they will certainly succeed in making the Bundesliga a more watched league in the UK than it had been before. And they'll benefit from that. And it's terrific. I mean, literally a couple of weeks ago, I was looking at thinking, who's going to end up picking this up? Is it going to be Premier who are going to pick it up?
Yeah.
Am I going to have to pay $14.99? Is it going to be DAZN, who I refuse to subscribe to? Maybe it'll be Sky. We'll see. You know, that will be fine. I've got Sky. But this is terrific. I mean, suddenly opened it up again. It's really good news. It's just a shame that we all know who's going to win the league, but there's plenty of other terrific stories going on underneath Bayern Munich and indeed Borussia Dortmund for that matter. So yeah, so if you're in the UK, listeners, and you're not across the Bundesliga, yeah, well, if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, you probably are, because I'm on it so much and I bang on about it so much. But this is the moment to get stuck into that league.
Well, yeah, and maybe I'm foreshadowing it a bit earlier now, but we are putting Friday night's game in the box set. It's going to open up the box set this week. And it's St. Pauli versus Hamburg. So, it's Hamburg's home game against St. Pauli, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Terry, tell new listeners, people who aren't across the Bundesliga, how important that game is.
St. Pauli is in Hamburg, so that is a city derby, and these are two pretty fierce rivals. There's genuine beef between them, but also there's a kind of familial closeness as well. Of it, St. Pauli, I'm sure people are aware, is something of a cult club that has a specific sort of like political point of view, a philosophical point of view, which I'm sure Hamburg fans probably find deeply, deeply insufferable because, you know, we're all holier than thou and political and progressive and all of that stuff. The two of them have been rivals for a long time, but actually they've not spent a lot of time playing each other because usually St. Pauli are a lower league club and you know, traditionally HSV are a Bundesliga club. They play in Europe traditionally, but it's all switched around and changed now. Hamburg have been relegated, St. Pauli have been promoted. And so this is actually coming into a situation where St. Pauli are the existing Premier League club and HSV are the new club coming up from the second division. So actually, St. Pauli are going to be probably favourites to win this game, which is unheard of. And I believe I've just written my preview. But you should still read the preview anyway in the box set when I get there. But yeah, so anyway, it's going to be a cracking atmosphere and a fantastic opportunity to watch a game like that, a massive city derby in Europe. On the BBC. I mean, like, these truly are the best of times.
Listeners, you may also not be aware that city derbies aren't that common in Germany. There's only a few cities where that's actually happened, where they play each other in top flight, because away from the sort of organic approach that football grew over here, over in Germany, when the Bundesliga was only created in the early 60s, wasn't it?
1963, yeah.
But when it was originally created, one of the stipulations, because Germany is a federal state, they had one team from one city. So you're going to have a team from Dortmund, you're going to have a team from Hamburg, you're going to have a team from Berlin. And that's how it was built, wasn't it, Terry?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why. Because at the time, 1860 Munich were the senior club in Munich of the two, between 1860 and Bayern. But Bayern were very much a coming force. Bayern were not founder members of the Bundesliga. For that reason, because in the way that the DFL chose to measure these things, 1860 Munich were, you know, to be fair, they were the superior club and they won the Bundesliga in the early years. And so, those two had quite a nice lively rivalry. Of course, 1860 have dropped off quite massively now, but that rivalry still exists. But yeah, you don't get it very often. I mean, like, you know, FC Cologne, you know, succeeded Fortuna Cologne, withered on the vine to an extent. Like, so there was no second club in Dortmund. There's no second club in Gelsenkirchen. So Dortmund and Gelsenkirchen formed their own rivalry between them in this way. So that's the way that they have. So there a lot of intercity derbies, but not a lot of city derbies. And so when one comes along in Germany, they're relatively unique. You know, they're relatively rare, I should say.
Yes. And this is, if you want to go and fall down a rabbit hole, then find out about the Berlin club in the inaugural Bundesliga season. There you go. That's your homework this week, yes?
That's your homework, yes.
Right. Now, we have given you a little insight into what's going to be in the box set, but it's not time yet to talk about the box set, because I think we do need to draw back on something that happened over the last few days that we need to talk about. And this is really just us being a bit introspective and really about how long we've been doing this for. Because we have been doing this podcast for a hell of a long time. Not just this episode. We have been doing this podcast now for 16 years, over 16 years. 2009 we started. And this week, it really came home, really. Because on Thursday night, when you were at the game at Palace, there was a player on the bench called Erik Granas for Fredrikstad, who was born in March 2010. This was followed on Saturday in the Arsenal game against Leeds when we brought on Max Dalman, who is also 15 years old. Now, here's what we were talking about when Erik Granas was born.
I don't think anyone should be too unhappy about Hughes' sacking. In context, I think he probably had it coming. He could have picked a better time, but I mean, I don't think that was necessary. But the way it's been handled is pretty shambolic. Yeah. Manchester City are a proper football club, always were, and this is not really what proper football clubs do.
Now, even Swales didn't do this, did he?
Swales would sack people, let's be fair, but he was never like that.
And here's what we were talking about when Max Dalman was born.
I think we both saw sadly, coverage on Friday night on ESPN of the match between Cologne and Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Blee now, you really picked that one. I mean,
ESPN do like to pick them, don't they,
but I mean, they must have thought, oh crikey, we'll shove that one on Friday night when no one's watching, apart from a couple of guys in England who really should be doing something else.
How old do you feel, Terry?
Ancient. Ancient. Can I just take a moment of total silence and dead air, please? That's just too much.
It is, isn't it? It's just, yeah. This day was always going to come, wasn't it?
The thing is, Graham, we weren't even particularly young back then.
We were both over 40, weren't we? That's the thing.
Well, I mean, in a way, it's a testimony to our longevity as podcasters. But let's not make it about us, eh?
Longevity or belligerence? I mean, I don't know what it really is.
Column A and column B, I guess.
Well, what are we going to watch to make us feel old this weekend, I wonder? Well, we already know what we're rocking on Friday night, don't we? We're watching Hamburg versus St. Pauli. And then Max Dalman is probably going to come on against Liverpool and probably just be very young, isn't he? And playing at Anfield, probably score. Terry, you'll be writing about Rangers Celtic this weekend. That's the first Old Firm of the season going up there. And it's not going very well for Russell Martin, is it? Well, he got the win eventually, didn't he, yesterday?
He did eventually. I think that is one dude who is under a lot of pressure. I don't think it's quite curtains for it, but they'll be certainly twitching if he doesn't get the right result this weekend.
Yes. Well, if you want to see what we think about this weekend's fixtures, or all the seven games that we think you should be watching from Friday to Sunday, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the Weekend Box It, where you can subscribe to our Substack. And once you're on Substack, you can probably subscribe to Terry's Substack as well, isn't it? Association Rules. You're on there as
Indeed.
Well. Yeah.
Yes, I'm on Substack. I have, after threatening for some months to do so, I am now on Substack. Yeah. Association Rules. You can check it out there.
Yeah, don't do that. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry DeFello, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
And now it's time for Soccer Jens.
Hello. 15 minutes of Bundesliga chat and I am not mentioned once. Not once, I tell you. I am relevant. I insist. I am relevant. Goodbye.
Tune in next week for another exciting episode of Soccer Jens.